You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
The media, Brian, some time ago just decided to put a protective wall around media, and I should say tech companies as well, big tech companies like Twitter and Facebook, decided to put a protective wall around Joe Biden's candidacy. They believe that electing Joe Biden is so important to the country, and they believe defeating Donald Trump is what they've been trying to do for the last 4 years. So they've just absolutely decided that whatever comes up, whatever story, however damaging it could be to Joe Biden, they're just going to ignore it. They're going to continue to downplay it, and they're going to continue to emphasize anything they can that's negative about Donald Trump.
October the 28th, 2020. Those are the words of Jerry Baker. He's a Wall Street Journal editor-at-large, and he nailed it, absolutely nailed it. The media has gone full frontal with Joe Biden. They don't even try to hide it anymore. They can't hide it, never could. But probably the most definitive recent, and I say recent example, is how the Hunter Biden email stories and computer has been handled by the mainstream media. And handles are not the best word. Ignored is a better word. Or whatever we can do to trash the man who brought it forward. That would be Tony Bobulinski. A former Biden insider at his own company, and he was being courted to get in bed and do more of these deals with the Bidens. He had direct meetings with Hunter Biden and others, and he said, I was waiting for them to come forward and start admitting and be truthful about it once the Hunter emails were published by the Post. He said, I waited, and I wasn't really going to go front and be up front and talk about all this. I didn't really want to because of threats against me and my family. But he said, I decided it's a patriotic thing to do when I continue to see how the mainstream media is just blowing it off. And he said, and then when I saw Congressman Adam Schiff accused me of lying and making it all up, and I made it clear if he did not make a retraction, I would go public. Well, Adam Schiff's not going to retract anything. And that's why Tony Bobulinski has come forward. He gave a detailed interview last night with Tucker Carlson on his program on Fox. I've broken it down in various pieces for you so we can examine it in detail, to help give you perspective and context on it. It's a massive story. It has so many working parts. It is hard to kind of keep in play, especially if you're listening on the radio or even watching on TV. It would take pages in a publication to fully explain it, but you're not going to get that from the mainstream media. They continue to just ignore it, as does big tech, Google, Facebook, Twitter, all of them. Well, to that point, today, big tech is testifying in front of Senate and the senators, asking questions about big tech. How and why or what are you doing? We want some accounting here. And there was an interesting, very interesting and strange development involving Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg. I'll explain that to you a little bit later. Oh, and one other thing before I move away from the Bobulinski story. A lot of questions about when Hunter Biden refers in one of the emails to the chairman. Is it Joe Biden, or is it, as some have tried to claim on the left, he's referring to the chairman of the Chinese company? Bobulinski has a very direct answer to that. We're also going to be joined by Zach Smith of the Heritage Foundation discussing the court cases our new Justice Barrett will be deciding. And, of course, the Trump campaign continues, holding rallies yesterday and again today in the battleground state of Arizona after being in Omaha last night, Omaha, Nebraska. He continues barnstorming. And Joe Biden had a crowd in Atlanta, Georgia yesterday. He had a crowd. He had a crowd of 771 people in 365 cars. It was a drive-in rally. 75,000 cars were rolling in Miami for Trump last week. What do you think is going on? There's no doubt. And also the violence is taking place in Philadelphia. How's that going to play out? How it will affect the election? We've got a lot to cover over the next 2 hours. Let your family and friends know we're on the air. Ready. Lock and loaded.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
We are slowly returning to normal as we knew life before COVID. Still, you need to be cautious. Make sure your business, school, place of worship are safe. Now, that's where Wellington Environmental can help. You can schedule professional fogging or deep cleaning with just a phone call. I'll give you a number. But first, you should know Wellington Environmental now offers fogging equipment you can use. These individual units are in high demand. Wellington has them available for now. They cost about $500, but my listeners get a big price break, a $100 discount. Save $100 just by saying you heard about it on Larry Connors USA. For more information on getting your personal fogging device or to schedule professional fogging, 314-644-4930. 314-644-4930. Be well with Wellington Environmental.
My sponsors keep this program on the air, so my thanks to John Beal Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest, best quality, lowest price. So when you need a roof, remember this sponsor for this program, John Beal Roofing, 1-800-NEW-ROOF, 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
There's no place to hide down here. No place to hide down here. Went to the rock, got on my knees. I heard the angels weep for me. To hide down here.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
I'm thinking about the Biden family. Like, how are they doing this? I know Joe decided not to run in 2016, but what if he ran in the future? Aren't they taking political risk or headline risk? And I remember looking at Jim Biden and saying, how are you guys getting away with this? Like, aren't you concerned? And he sort of looked at me and he laughed a little bit and said, plausible deniability.
Those are the words of Tony Bobulinski in the interview with Tucker Carlson last night. Bobulinski, a retired lieutenant in the U.S. Navy, and he is a former business associate of Hunter Biden, as they were trying to pull him into various deals involving various countries. He had some questions and reservations, as you heard. And when he was talking to a member of the Biden family, he said, how are you guys, aren't you worried about this? Aren't you worried that something can come back? I mean, how are you going to get around this thing? He was talking about that time at 2015. Now, at that time, VP Biden was not running. But the question being is, what if in the future he runs on his own or tries to? Or if he continues to serve in other capacities? How are you going to get around it? What are you going to do about it? And the rather smug response and dismissive response, and absolutely frustrating response, was simply to say, plausible deniability. Plausible deniability. You think that's brazen? Well, then you think exactly like Jerry Baker, Wall Street Journal editor at large, when he heard about that phrase of plausible deniability.
It doesn't get more brazen than that. I mean, that, you know, to acknowledge that what you're doing is so questionable that you actually, the phrase plausible deniability is a long-standing one in politics, meaning essentially, I can get away with denying something that's true. In other words, I can get away with saying something with saying a falsehood. It's brazen.
It is brazen. And what gave them the belief that they can actually get away with that? I mean, you stop and think about it for a moment. If a politician just kind of offers this plausible deniability, in other words, I know, you know, you can't touch me. You can't touch me. I'm beyond being touched. Nobody. I am who I am. And you're nothing. Oh, you're a media member. You're a real reporter, a journalist, someone really digging for a story. And you demand an answer. Well, maybe in that case, plausible deniability isn't going to hold. It would begin to unravel. And then bits and pieces would begin to fall away until the whole thing is stripped naked, and then we see what really is the story. And good reporting, investigative teams get past your so-called plausible deniability. You sold it to the public, and they were buying it because you're not being pressed by the media. But then if somebody really does a job, if they really decide, we aren't going to accept that, you're going to have to back it up. Well, you can't just offer deniability, deny. Yeah, it's back to the Bill Clinton. Everybody has learned from Bill Clinton, originally with Monica Lewinsky. Deny. It may not go away, but that's your story, and you're sticking to it until you are absolutely hauled in front of Congress or federal agents, and you're under oath, and then you better speak up with the truth or you're going to jail for perjury. But then again, maybe you've already decided, I'll face less time for perjury than what I actually did. Plausible deniability. It stands because if you don't have reporters actually looking, actually investigating, instead of just basically taking the press handout from the target of an inquiry and saying, this isn't enough, you're going to have to explain more, then it will fall apart. Well, why hasn't it done it in this case? We had the Hunter Biden emails from that computer released a week ago, more now, by the New York Post. And mainstream media, what did they do? They just kind of ignored it and walked away. Even your taxpayer-funded national public radio said, we don't want to deal in something that really isn't fact. We don't want to deal in something that's more of a nuisance. We don't want to burden our listeners and our readers with something that's just a distraction. The same folks who ran rapidly, breathlessly, repeating over and over, Trump, Russia collusion. It's Trump, Russia collusion. They did it over and over and over. They had no facts. And they pointed constantly to a piece of document, the Steele dossier, which even the FBI had said is worthless. It's full of lies, fiction. But they used it, of course, some of them, to get a FISA warrant to carry out investigations. And the mainstream media just gobbled it up. Plausible deniability continues to stand right now and is serving as a defense for Joe Biden and everyone else linked to him and what he's been doing, because they know who's in their corner. Again, the words of Wall Street Journal editor-at-large Jerry Baker.
The reason, frankly, they are able to get away with it is because the media has decided that they're going to let them. Hey, can you imagine if this were a Republican, if this were Donald Trump? We've seen so many stories about Donald Trump over the last 4 years, many of them based in absolute no truth whatsoever. They have been investigated, you know, left, right and center. Every conceivable angle of every allegation that's ever been made about Donald Trump has been on the front page of newspapers, has been investigated by the major networks. This is an important story, and they are just simply burying it.
Burying it. In other words, just giving it nothing. We're going to spend more time in the next hour on how the media has been downplaying all of this story. And we're going to spend more time exactly on the facts of what Bubba Linsky is revealing about the actions inside the Biden operations. The very one that President Trump is now labeling the Biden criminal conspiracy. But Bubba Linsky, even in his interview with Tucker Carlson last night, he was asked, you know, when you look at how this has been handled since you've come forward, since you made your statement, and you provided documentation. I mean, he didn't just say things. He said, here are the emails. I've got the same emails on my computer and my phones as the Sun, or rather the Post, has been publishing from the computer. He said, I was a recipient of some of those. And then sometimes I was listed as a sender because it was all as a group sending email to someone else. He said, but I've got them right here. Everybody can look at them. And so he was asked, well, are you, Tucker Carlson asked him, are you surprised that the media just really hasn't done anything with it?
Surprised is probably an understatement of the year. Shocked, because it would be different if this was my word against Jim Biden, Hunter Biden, and Joe Biden.
Right.
That would be a very slippery slope, not something I would take the personal and family risk on it. But I've provided more documents and facts that validate times, meetings, who participated. That email to me on May 13th was generated by somebody else sent to me. It wasn't me generating. These text messages that I've provided are Hunter Biden in the first person, Jim Biden in the first person, James Gillier in the first person, Rob Walker in the first person. It's not me generating the text messages. It's them speaking. So you can interview them. The FBI can interview them. Our government can interview them. But I was shocked that not only the media is not only discussing this, they're going to the other extreme. They're dismissing it as Russian disinformation. This country has heard enough about Russia. We went through 3 years of every day, Russia, Russia, Russia. It's just absurd.
It is absurd. But it's a fallback. It's the fallback. They sound the retreat. You're not going to try to push forward. You're just going to fall back, and you're going to fall back behind the biggest barrier you think, and that would be Russian disinformation. And I'll remind you again, despite the 2.5+ years and all the millions and millions of dollars spent in the so-called Mueller investigation, it still came down to they don't have confirmed proof of any Russian collusion information, and all those talking heads, CIA director, former FBI director, other members of the Obama staff, yes, the Obama staff, and investigative agencies going on the talk shows daily. Well, I can't tell you exactly what was said behind closed doors because it's intended to be private at this point. But I will tell you, it's going to be really bad for Trump. It's going to fall down. We got some big, big news coming. It's going to be disastrous for Trump. Well, you keep hearing that drum beat often enough, you kind of get into it. Your head starts nodding. Yeah, I got it. There's a lot of stuff there. You know, they got something on him. And yet, when the transcripts are actually released and they are asked repeatedly, what do you have? You got nothing. I got nothing. Well, you were out there telling the media all of this. And all these same, quote, experts who supposedly were in the know and giving the public the real story of what was going on, even though they couldn't say anything specific, making all their appearances on CNN and MSNBC and all the other national networks making their statements over and over again that it's going to be damning for Trump. This will get him out of office. This will also provide information for impeachment. When everything was opened up and the transcripts were made public and they were found to be lying to the American public, which they can do. They're not under oath to be truthful with you, but when they're in that investigative committee, Congress, Senate, federal agents, they better be truthful or they will be hit with perjury. And did the mainstream media then, the very ones that had them parading around on a constant basis, talking about how bad it was, did they have them back to explain, why did you tell us that you had a lot of stuff and there was a lot of stuff and now we know that you said in the committee behind closed doors, I have nothing. Did you ever see the mainstream media invite any of them back and question and push that point? No. No, no, no. Because again, they are all in bed with getting Joe Biden elected. Or actually, they don't care who they get, but they got to get Trump out. We are going to spend more time in the next hour, both on how the media has been covering this up, and of course, more stories about what Bob Alinsky is saying about the Biden family and its operations. As I mentioned earlier, Big Tech is testifying today in the Senate, a Senate hearing. An interesting development on that, but also how they've been covering up. Stand by, please.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
So right now, leaders of the three biggest tech companies in the world facing somewhat of a dilemma. The CEOs of technology giants Facebook, Google, and Twitter are all appearing before a Senate Commerce Committee. The committee last week authorized subpoenas for Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook, the leader of Google, Twitter, of course that'd be Jack Dorsey, threatening to force them to testify if they didn't do so voluntarily. Well, the companies sent word Monday, we'll be there, but you don't have to send a subpoena. We'll be there. We're more than happy to help. Now, one of the issues gets down to what was done by a Communications Decency Act, Section 230, which basically protected Internet companies from being sued by what appears on their pages. Now, you have to keep in mind, it is different than a radio station, a newspaper, or TV station, since most of the content is generated, written, produced, reported by staff members. Facebook, Twitter, so forth, you got a Twitter account, you can put up anything. Now, they really can't spend all their time verifying everything that goes up, but of course, they've been so obvious lately that if it's anything that is anti-Biden, anti-Democrats, and pro-Trump, it tends to just disappear and not get circulated very much. So we come to that story with the New York Post the other day releasing the Hunter Biden tapes from that computer. And there's been additional documentation, so they didn't want to believe the Post. Well, there's more documentation been available, and they're still not doing it. So one of the questions came from Senator Cruz. It's underway now, so I don't have the actual sound, but let me read what he asked. You can censor the New York Post. You can censor Politico. Who the hell elected you and put you in charge of what the media are allowed to report? Jack Dorsey at Twitter said, well, we're not doing that, and that's why I opened this hearing with cause for more transparency. I hear the concerns, acknowledge them. We want to fix it with more transparency. Blah, 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 blah. You've had your opportunities repeatedly. Blah, blah, blah. You haven't done that either. Well, we're going to be blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I hear you talking. You sound like a duck. You look like a duck. You are a duck because you're ducking all our questions. It's going to get worse for them before the day's over. Oh, I got to tell you what happened in the beginning. This is funny and ironic beyond laughter. The Facebook CEO, Mark Zuckerberg, he had to delay his appearance. Facebook staffers requested a brief recess because Zuckerberg was having he was having technical difficulties trying to connect to the hearing via video chat. Really? The Senator Wicker said, members have been advised we can't make contact, Mr. Zuckerberg. He's alone trying to connect. An interesting development, but we're going to accommodate the request of Facebook and give him another 5 minutes so we can make contact proceed. So when you had trouble with your internet service or provider or something, I guess say, well, I guess it also happens to Facebook. Or did it just happen? I'm just asking. Take a break. When we're back, we'll be joined by Jack Smith Heritage Foundation. We want to look at some of the cases Justice Barrett will be deciding. Please stand by.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
You can run on for a long time. Run on for a long time. Run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
We're joined by Zach Smith of the Heritage Foundation, a legal fellow in the Meese Center for Legal and Judicial Studies, previously served as an assistant for U.S. Attorney in the Northern District of Florida. And Zach, glad to have you on board with us. I wanted to get into some of the cases Justice Barrett will be facing. Welcome aboard, sir.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me, Larry.
Glad to have you. Now, go ahead, sir. You had something.
Well, I was just going to say you're absolutely right to focus on this because there are certainly several very important cases slated on the Supreme Court's docket in the next several months.
I was trying to catch up. Did a ruling come down yesterday she's already been involved in? I kind of got scattered on some stuff I was pulling together.
Well, one of the things that I've seen kicked about in the news, you know, there are already motions for her to recuse herself being filed right now. And it was kind of ironic. In one of those cases, it was county. The county's lawyers filed a motion to recuse Justice Barrett. And I guess the county, in fact, did not want Justice Barrett to be recused. And so they actually got into a little bit of a public spat with their lawyers.
And which case was that and who was involved?
It was a county out of Pennsylvania, I believe.
That's what I was thinking, yeah.
Yeah.
Had to do with the voting issues again, didn't it? Well, we obviously, Zuckerberg heard what I was saying earlier and cut us off, I guess. No, I'm only kidding. We'll get Zach reestablished. It's live radio, folks. It happens. I mean, you know. But, of course, I'm a native Texan, and I have a BS degree, and I use the BS part all the time. Zach, you're back. You're back.
I am. Sorry about that.
That's okay. Go ahead.
I was just saying, you know, we at our confirmation hearings, we heard a lot about Justice Barrett needing to recuse herself from any cases involving Donald Trump or the current administration. And, you know, it's just absurd and it's out of line with recent practice. And so I'm confident that now Justice Barrett will be able to, you know, fully participate in the court's cases moving forward.
Well, to that extent, by the way, have we ever had in the past immediately when a justice is seated, and obviously they're always nominated by a president, confirmed by a Senate, usually of the same party. Have we ever had anyone else previously come forward and say that justice should recuse himself because they've been nominated by this president in any case it might involve him or anything to do with his political views? I mean, where would that stop?
Well, it certainly seems to be an argument made almost exclusively against Republican nominees that we've seen coming out in recent years. But again, nominees of both parties have heard and decided cases involving the president who appointed them to the bench. And so to the extent someone's saying there's something strange or something inappropriate about that, it's not. And historical practice certainly bears that out.
So let's look at some of the cases she's going to be facing. One of the ones that could happen, depending on this election itself, could be deciding if it was run correctly and if it was balanced. I mean, there's so many aspects that could come in. It may not be a hanging chad, as we saw with Gore and Bush, but it's still something that could be put in front of the Supreme Court. And now we have a nine-member court. You're not going to have a 4-4 tie.
That's right. And I think, President Trump, Mitch McConnell, they got a lot of flack for basically making the argument that, you know, the Supreme Court could be asked to decide important election-related questions, and that because of that, it's important to have a full nine-member court functioning and ready to decide those issues. And I think based on, you know, we've seen some 4-4 splits come out in recent election-related cases, one from Pennsylvania, in fact, just a couple weeks ago. And so I think it, you know, they were absolutely right to make that argument. They were absolutely right that it is important to have a full court. And you are absolutely right that if those issues do come before the court, you know, I think Justice Barrett will be expected to weigh in on them and to participate in the court's decision-making process.
Well, I'm looking at a I'm going back over and looking at some notes here. If I recall right, Justice Roberts was, of course, at the time not a Supreme Court justice, and Senator Cruz, I think, might have also been involved, but not as a senator at the time, and even Amy Barrett during the Gore Bush issue that they were siding with the Bush team, trying to find and work that case through. Am I right about that?
Well, you're absolutely right on that. And not only those three, but also Justice Kavanaugh. Justice Kavanaugh was also involved in the Bush v. Gore litigation as well on the side of, you know, the Bush administration. And so, again, you know, there is nothing wrong or inappropriate about justices or judges participating in cases involving the administration or the president that appointed them.
Well, you know, the point I want to make with that is that obviously that was a different race entirely, two different men, Gore and Bush, but Bush being Republican and with Trump being Republican, how much noise are we going to hear that? Well, we know they're going to side for the Republican. We saw how they helped Bush defeat Gore and stole that election.
Well, I don't think it really matters what the issue is. We're going to hear that basically involving any issue, if it's election related, if it's dealing with a policy of the Trump administration. You know, we're already hearing that type of, saber rattling from Democratic lawmakers right now. And that's one of the major rationales they're pushing forward for this dangerous and absurd idea of court packing, expanding the Supreme Court so they can appoint additional justices as well.
And a couple of cases that we know are on the docket at this time, November 30th, the Trump v. New York, that's referenced Democrat-governed states. They don't like Trump's decision to not allow illegals to be included in the census, and that's important to the Democrats to get everybody counted to boost their numbers. That's going to be one of the cases she'll be dealing with, correct?
It will be. That's definitely a high-profile case. Earlier in November, in fact, I believe the day after Election Day on November 4th, the court's going to hear another very important case, Fulton v. City of Philadelphia. In that case, the City of Philadelphia basically prohibited Catholic charities from continuing to serve as an adoption agency, as a foster placement agency, because they themselves would not provide placements with same-sex couples. They would refer couples to other agencies that would make those placements, but they themselves would not. And so because of that, they were basically blackballed by the City of Philadelphia. And so that will be a very high-profile, a very important case that Justice Barrett will be asked to participate in and to help decide right out of the gate, really.
Yeah, November the 10th, of course, we got the Texas v. California reference Obama mandate. But before I spend more time on those cases, I want to take you to a quote that Senator Ed Markey, a Democrat of Massachusetts, had made. Because Justice Barrett had made it very clear in her hearings that she's going to look at the Constitution as it was written, as the forefathers intended, and, of course, not going to use her position to rewrite the Constitution, certainly, nor make law, which they're not supposed to be able to. But Senator Ed Markey's remarks, I want to get your response to this. He said that term, originalism, he said it's racist, it's sexist, it's homophobic, it's just a fancy word for discrimination.
That's an absurd statement. I saw that statement when he posted it on Twitter. And, you know, look, there are a lot of people disagree with originalism as a judicial philosophy. But to attack it as being racist, as being sexist, is just absurd and is really either shows one of two things. Either he does not understand what originalism is as a judicial philosophy, or he's just being blatantly disingenuous and pandering for political purposes.
Well, I would vote on the second one, but go ahead.
Right. Well, you know, and I'm not sure which one is worse, but, you know, I think, and Justice Barrett did a great job at her confirmation hearings laying out what originalism is and how it informs her decision-making as a judge and a justice. And it's just basically the idea that it's not the role of judges to make law, to make policy. It's the role of judges to look at the text of the Constitution, look at the text of laws that Congress has passed, and to basically interpret those, the Constitution, those laws, based on what they say, and not for a judge to impose their own policy preference.
Now, to that point, of course, when she talks about the Constitution and the forefathers, she's talking about it as it was written at that time. We obviously have had amendments to the Constitution that did come through legislative processes and so forth and approval by states. And so it has been updated and revised as the legislature has decided it needed to do. And that becomes part of the Constitution, too. So how does, very quickly, how does an amendment fit with the constitutionality of originalist and the base written as our forefathers did it?
Well, when an amendment adds to the Constitution, exactly what you said, it basically updates or changes, you know, the Constitution. And so what originalist judges would do, they'd look at the understanding of that amendment as it was passed. And so this comes up frequently with the 14th Amendment, which was passed in the wake of the Civil War and the civil rights legislation being passed at that time. And in many ways, the 14th Amendment, you know, updated our Constitution in a lot of ways. And so originalists aren't against the idea that the Constitution can be updated or changed to fit with our times. It's just that there's a process, the amendment process,
right,
for making those updates happen. And
all
it's
right,
not up to judges to do that.
Thank you again, Zach. Always appreciate it. I kind of had to force that time on you. I apologize. But I do appreciate
no
the
problem.
Answer. You bet. Zach Smith, the Heritage Foundation. This violence in Philadelphia and elsewhere across the nation, how's that going to affect the election? Stand by.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
Well, the violence in the city of Brotherly Love last night involving about 1,000. And I'm not talking about just protesting. I'm talking about violence, looting, setting multiple fires on streets, attacking police, shining lasers in their eyes. All because, of course, traced to a shooting of a black man by police on Tuesday. I should say Monday. Now, that shooting is still being evaluated and it being looked at. And, of course, a lot of folks are saying the officers could have done something else. The police had been to the home 2 times earlier that same day. And the third time they were called, it was supposedly to go ahead and get him in an ambulance and take him to a hospital for treatment. He obviously, according to his relatives, so forth, had mental issues and either was off his meds or for something of that nature. But when he's there with police in the street, he's got a knife in his hand and he's repeatedly refusing to drop it. Other witnesses say he also had the knife. His mother admits he had it and was trying to hold him back and saying, don't shoot him. And they were urging police, you know, maybe try a taser. Neither officer had, my understanding was, the taser with them. Whether or not they would use it is really questionable, because when someone is within 10 feet of you with a knife, something like that, you had to count on that taser doing its job immediately. And if you don't hit it right, it will not do the job. Believe me. If it doesn't hit correctly, if it doesn't stick to the body as it should. And how long do you want to stand there when a man with a knife, when he starts coming at you? They had moved around the car. Police moved away from him several times, going around the car, keeping a distance, and he continued to come around. It's a matter of fact, the man should, anyone should, follow instructions of police. Now, if he was mentally unstable, who knows what was going through his mind? But if your father or your brother or your son was one of the officers, do you want them to just go ahead and take a chance and let him come at them? I mean, that's, do you really want police exposed so nakedly like that? Investigate the case. Go ahead and investigate. See what actually happened. But the violence in the streets, what is that accomplishing? Even his family is coming out and condemning that violence. He said, I can't condone violence stirring up the city, looting of the stores. He said, stop the violence to help my son and help my family. And when you look at the looters, they're not out there, again, in honor and trying to make a point about the death of the man. They're simply stealing, using it as an excuse to ransack and grab money and items from Walmart and Foot Locker. The others they hit and crash things and burn them. They are looking only for the benefit of violence. Now, who's that going to benefit? And by the way, it wasn't just there. You had in Brooklyn, New York, multiple fires set in the streets also last night. All tied to that same incident. We're less than a week before Election Day. Now, I had pointed out the other day, a lot of the violence had been kind of curtailed and tamped down because I believe those behind it, those organizing it, and I'm talking about Black Lives Matters and even Antifa, saying, look, let's just don't do anything like that right now. It's going to solidify votes for Trump. And even if we're out there doing, quote, a legitimate First Amendment protest, if it gets out of hand, it'll be used against us at the polls. I think that's probably true. So we've had quiet. We haven't had violence until now and last night, and it may well continue again tonight. That's driving a lot of votes to Trump. I had no doubt about it. We're going to see, obviously, next Tuesday. Well, we won't necessarily see that day, but we should be able to get some good idea. It depends. Again, we'll have to see how those votes are counted. And there have been so many things that have been passed and accepted that had to be debated and adjudicated. In one case, a state saying it's going to allow, it will allow signatures on a ballot, even if it doesn't match a signature that's on file. Does that not suggest to you that somebody might be cheating? If someone gets your name and your information, they go in and vote ahead of you and they sign that ballot, and you come in and say, you ready to vote, said, you've already voted. No, I haven't. Show it to me. And you look at, that's not my signature. Well, you were here earlier voting. No, I did not. Well, that's theft of your vote. And I don't care if you want to vote for Trump or Biden. Your vote just got stolen. Coming up in the next hour, we're going to spend more time on the stories and details of Bobulinski. Tony Bobulinski was a Biden insider on some of their deals. He gave an extended interview to Tucker Carlson last night. I've broken it down for you so we can go through it piece by piece and examine various parts. But not just his story and what he's saying, but how the media has been dealing with this story and continues to deal with it, which for many of them is, what story? I don't see anything here. Nothing. Right. We're going to blow that out of the water. Coming up next hour.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
You've been listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.